You know what that sound means? It's another episode of Game for a Movie, where we ask, are you game for a movie? My name is Mike. I will be your host for the third episode in our spoopy season. It is a movie that actually, I know we only cover bad movies, and when I say this, you're going to be a little confused, but this is a movie that has won an Oscar. Yes, we are going to get well into that, but first, of course, we talk about what we are drinking. Right now, Sierra Nevada has a special limited edition beer. This is the Cosmic Little Thing. It is a hazy double IPA, and the can art is pretty cool. It's very big tall boy, like super tall boy, and it was two for $6, so of course I had to do it. And it's pretty good, actually. I really enjoy it. Unfortunately, it is limited edition, so I'm a little worried about when I drink these two, it's going to be gone. Like, I'm not going to be able to find it again, depending on when I finish it by. I know what you're saying, stock up, get a bunch of it, everything like that. Beer is weird, especially limited editions. They usually need to be drank pretty early on in the process. You can't just like leave it in your fridge for a while. But I'm going to try my best to have as many before it goes away. Okay, let's get on to the bad movie. If you haven't seen the title of this episode and you're just tuning in, well, thank you very much for just listening to whatever we are putting out there. But this is The Wolfman from 2010. It was released February 12th, 2010. It is rated R. It is about an hour and 42 minutes. It is a horror, mystery, thriller, action movie. Yes, all of those things in one. It is a horror, mystery, thriller, action movie. This movie stars Benicio del Toro, Emily Blunt, Anthony Hopkins, and unexpected, because I knew those three were in it, unexpectedly Hugo Weaving. When he showed up, it was one of those, I'm sorry, is that Hugo Weaving? According to Rotten Tomatoes, it sits at a perfect 33%, 33% critic score, 33% audience score. So about a 33% if you're doing the math, which I was told there would be no math. So let's get started with a little bit about this movie. This is one of the four attempts that was made to launch the Universal Dark Universe. Obviously, everybody wants to try to compete with Marvel Cinematic Universe, and there has been four attempts that just haven't seemed to be going the right way for Universal. We had Van Helsing. This is the second attempt, The Wolfman. The third attempt was Dracula Untold. And finally, we covered it last year, 2017's The Mummy, starring Tom Cruise. All of them so far have failed to work. And obviously they've kind of gone through with they're going to add a dark park to Universal Studios so they can use all their monster movies and everything like that that they still have the rights for. They're creating a dark universe land kind of thing. Obviously, I'm going to go into more details, but here's a brief synopsis for the beginning. Upon his return to his ancestral homeland, an American man is bitten and subsequently cursed by a werewolf. This movie was directed by Joe Johnston. And Joe Johnston, if you recognize that name, has a lot of movies to his name. He is responsible for directing Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, The Rocketeer, The Pagemaster, The Adventures of Young Indiana Jones, Jumanji, October Sky, Jurassic Park 3, Captain America the First Avenger, and, of course, The Wolfman. He's not the only one who worked on this movie that had success outside of The Wolfman and everything like that. We've got the writers. There was three writers on this movie credited. There is Andrew Kevin Walker. Andrew Kevin Walker is known for writing The Killer, Seven, Sleepy Hollow. He has a bunch of projects that he's been known for and a couple wins as well for some awards. Second writer, his name is David Self. He is known for writing Road to Perdition, 13 Days, and 1999's The Haunting, which we covered last year on this show as well. And finally, the last writer that gets credit is Kurt Siodmak. He had actually died in 2000, so I know what you're thinking. How could he be credited with the writing part of The Wolfman? Well, he's kind of the writer of a lot of Universal's monster movies and everything like that. He's known for The Wolfman from 1941, The Invisible Man Returns, a bunch of other stuff like that. You know, The Brain, we've got The Devil's Messenger, Sherlock Holmes and the Deadly Necklace, Tales of Frankenstein, a bunch of those kind of movies. He definitely is a big part of why the Universal monster movies were the things they were back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, that kind of stuff. I do like that they were willing to give Kurt a little bit of credit, including him as a third writer on this thing, because truthfully, let's face it, he deserves it. You know, this is his baby. So we wouldn't have this movie if it weren't for the stuff he had done in the 40s and 50s and everything like that beforehand. As I started this episode, I had told you that this is a bad movie that has won an Oscar, an Academy Award. It actually has been nominated for 8 different awards and has 4 wins. Most of these wins are for makeup and hairstyling. That is what they won the Academy Award for. That is Rick Baker and Dave Elsey. They won the 2011 Oscar for Best Achievement in Makeup. They also won the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films Best Makeup. And some of the other winners, we've got 2010 winner for BMI Film and TV Awards for Best Film Music. That was Danny Elfman. And the last one that they won as well was the Gold Derby Awards, 2011 winner for Makeup and Hair. And truthfully, they deserve all the credit for that. Like I said, this movie's from 2010, and I know it's only 14 years ago, but it's amazing sometimes how quickly the industry changes. Because even though I'm sure it was great for its time and everything like that, it looks dated to even now. And it was only 14 years ago. However, they did do an amazing job. It was very good. And I'm sure for the time, it was excellent and stands out. It definitely stands out as one of those things in my head that when I'm thinking of this movie, I will remember for a long time the makeup and the hairstyling that they did. So what do you think? Let's get into a synopsis of what happened. Here is the step-by-step, of course, of the Wolfman from 2010. They started off as well with the Universal logo. They made it the retro Universal logo, and that definitely gets points for me. We get a title card that says Blackmoor, England, 1891 to start us off. There's a guy looking for something in the woods, and he gets clawed down immediately by a wolf with some decent claw effects, I would say. Then we flash forward to Benicio del Toro. He is playing Hamlet in a traveling production. His character's name, for the sake of everything, is Lawrence Talbot. He is Lawrence Talbot. So after the show of Hamlet, they are all having this after party, and Emily Blunt, who plays Gwen Conliff, she interrupts the after party, and she is looking for Ben. Ben is Talbot's brother. And she is married to, or she is engaged to be married to Ben Talbot. When she brings up that Ben is missing, Lawrence sends the party away and says basically he'll catch up with all of them after. And so they are talking. She wants him to stay and try to find Ben because she thinks that he'll be able to find him and hopefully be able to convince him because he seems like he just disappeared. But he is under contract for 30 more performances of Hamlet. They're traveling and they're going back to America after those 30 performances. So he cannot help find his brother Ben. So you think that's it about this whole scene. But then for whatever reason, he changes his mind. And he's going back to his ancestors' land, which is Blackmoor, England. And so he's on a train to Blackmoor. And this old man sits in the same train car as him. And he offers him a very nice walking stick for the moor. Because it's a moor, you know, you need something to help you stay upright and everything like that. And this moor or this walking stick is made with silver. Lawrence is very appreciative, but doesn't take it. He doesn't want to take this old man's walking stick, even though he offered it to him. Lawrence falls asleep on the train, and when he wakes up, they're in Blackmoor, and he's noticed that the old man has left and left his walking stick behind. So Lawrence accepts the gift now. One of the things you will notice about the walking stick is that it has a wolf head, and there's a lot of wolf imagery we've seen so far, including that there is like wolf pelts in the mansion as he gets there. When he gets there, he is greeted by his father and his father's assistant. His father is played by Anthony Hopkins. He is Sir John Talbot, and his father's assistant is Singh. Singh is played by Art Malik. I don't know Art Malik very well, but he plays Singh, the assistant. When he gets there, we get the stereotypical line of, "Ah, the prodigal son returns." Lawrence shows up asking about his brother and if Sir John has seen him or knows where he went. And as it turns out, his brother's body just showed up. He has unfortunately not made it. This is also when we see some of the claws and know that he's been attacked by something. We don't know what he's been attacked by, but he's been attacked by something. And everybody else in this so far has been British, except for Lawrence, who is American. We don't know the reason why so far, especially because we do know this is his ancestors' land and everything like that. It goes to a local pub where Lawrence happens to be drinking, and the regulars are speculating about if it's an actual murderer that killed Ben or if it's an actual beast that has been doing this. They also blame the gypsies who showed up a week ago, talking about the fact that kind of they're the dirty kind, like that kind of thing, that the gypsies, it would be better if the gypsies left their land, you know, that kind of thing. And it's just setting up that these gypsies are in the town as well, because we do get some scene of the gypsies and everything like that. This opens the door to an old man at this pub who goes into lore exposition, talking about the fact that there's a werewolf, that werewolves are known for being from this area, and that the werewolf is probably what killed Ben, because it's an actual beast that tore him up and everything like that. No man can do this and everything like that. Lawrence stands up at this and starts talking to the old man, and one of the guys sees that it's Lawrence and calls his mother a whore, to which, of course, Lawrence splashes a drink in his face and he gets kicked out. So Lawrence goes back to the mansion, and this is when we start to see that him and his father don't really see eye to eye. There's something we haven't been told yet, but for whatever reason, these two just don't seem to get along. Sir John invites Lawrence to take a look at his telescope, and you can tell the father is obsessed with the moon. He's talking about the fact that it's not a full moon, everything like that. It's a very fancy telescope as well, so obviously there's something about Sir John wanting to see the moon, wanting to be close to the moon, wanting to know more about the moon. Gwen is staying at the mansion as well. She arrives, and Lawrence and Sir John all sit out to have a nice dinner. And Lawrence and John kind of, like I said, they don't see eye to eye. They get into an argument, and basically Lawrence storms off. When he sees Gwen next, he gives Ben's effects to her as a sort of apology for the dinner ruckus. And Gwen wants to know, is asking Lawrence what happened to Ben. And Lawrence is just kind of saying he'll do everything he can to figure it out. So it's late at night. He's kind of like walking in the old house, and he starts hearing children laughing, and he starts having these flashbacks about the house and everything he remembers when he grew up in it and everything like that. And one of the big things he remembers in this flashback is when his mother committed suicide. And it definitely depressed him and put him in a weird mental state, that so much so Sir John sent him to an asylum for a year and then shipped him to their aunt in America. This is why he speaks with an American accent instead of a British accent, which is still very funny because, remember, this is Benicio del Toro, and he's doing an American accent. So it's a couple days later. I don't know how many days exactly, but it just so happens to be a full moon. And so Sir John's just kind of like, Lawrence, you should stay inside. You shouldn't go out there, everything like that. There's a full moon tonight. And of course, Lawrence is just like, no, I'm going out there. I'm going to figure out more about my brother's death, everything like that. So he ends up going to the gypsy camp. He wants to find who sells the medallion that he found in his brother's effects. When he shows one of the gypsies the medallion and everything, she points him to the way of Maleva. Maleva is a gypsy fortune teller. And Maleva is played by Geraldine Chaplin. I'm just giving you the names of some of these major characters. I'll be completely honest, it's another person I don't really know that well, but that is who plays Maleva. While they're having a conversation about the medallion and about the reason she gave it to his brother, which was apparently not that big a deal, because one of the things that is constantly happening is the camp is getting attacked by something. And so screams start happening and Lawrence runs out of the fortune teller's shack and picks up a gun to try and shoot at the beast. He also protects a mother and daughter while they are kind of like separated. He helps both of them get away from this thing. There's a gypsy boy who runs away and the beast starts chasing after him. And so Lawrence goes after it just to try to protect the boy. As he goes out into the fog, he ends up in this area that I think is Stonehenge because it literally is just like stones in the ground upright and everything like that. They don't really show the whole area, but I led to believe that. And as he turns around in the fog, Lawrence gets attacked by the creature and gets pretty much mauled, like almost near death and everything like that. The gypsies come and they bring him back to the gypsy encampment and everything like that. And they are able to save his life. But they have a conversation about if they save him, he's going to be a beast and he's going to kill others. But Maleva, she's like, I won't let him die. So they end up saving his life and they get him back to his mansion. And he's basically just like laid up in bed the next couple of days. And when he gets there, he starts having these nightmares about creatures, demons and stuff like that. And he also sees Gwen in these nightmares. Gwen is actually there by his bedside, keeping him company and watching over him while he's having this like these nightmares and trying to recover and everything like that. At the same time, we kind of see that Gwen and Sir John kind of have a little bit of a rocky edge to them as well. It doesn't seem like Sir John really trusts Gwen either. But it may have to do with she kind of encouraged him to find these answers and he went out against Sir John's wishes on a full moon night. The last day really of his recovery, Dr. Lloyd comes in and was saying how he probably will never be able to use his arm again. But then when he looks at it, he sees that it's kind of healed himself. So it's not perfectly healed, but it's definitely a lot better than it probably should be, however many days since the attack. One of the things I had as well is when he finally is up and recovered, he goes to talk to Sing, and Sing is loading a weapon with silver bullets, and it's getting close to another full moon. So Sing is just prepared with his silver bullets and his weapon. And there's a conversation about, like, Lawrence says to him, I didn't know you hunted monsters. And Sing says, sometimes monsters hunt you. And just kind of sets that whole thing in motion. This is when Hugo Weaving shows up. Hugo Weaving shows up at the mansion. His name is Aberline. And he works for Scotland Yard. And he wants some answers about the gypsy encampment that got attacked. And he implies when he's talking to Sir John and Lawrence that he thinks Lawrence might be responsible because he was in an asylum back when he was a kid. Lawrence implies back going, weren't you in charge of the Ripper case? Just kind of throwing that in his face about the fact that Aberline never caught the Ripper. This is just kind of to show that, hey, this is where we're going. This is going to be probably a big part of our final finale and everything like that. You can tell it's these two heavyweights, Hugo Weaving and Benicio del Toro. They're going to be the ones at the end that are kind of like having this thing. The next day, there's a scene of Gwen out by the river, and there's a scene of Lawrence teaching her how to skip stones. Because, you know, all these movies need some kind of romantic hook and everything like that. They show this because they want to show how they're getting close and everything like that. And then a bunch of people show up to the mansion when they get back to take Lawrence to test out if he is a beast because the full moon is almost upon them again. Sir John shoots one of the horses belonging to one of the men, meaning to shoot the man himself because he isn't the marksman he used to be. And there's a whole joke about how he killed the horse and everything like that. Gwen and Lawrence back in the mansion, there's like this intimate scene between them that shows how they're getting closer and everything like that, and also shows how he's like hearing her heartbeat better, especially as they get closer and closer to the full moon. He also at the end tells Gwen to leave because he's worried about her getting hurt. And I said, get this, she actually listens and leaves the mansion. While she is leaving and everything like that, the villagers are all preparing. They are like making these silver weapons because they obviously now know it's a werewolf or some kind of beast that silver is going to heard it. And Aberline is at the pub on the full moon. And the villagers are like very shocked that he's sitting at the pub versus like going to the house and taking care of the family, because they know there's a curse on the family. Basically, there's this longstanding curse on the family, and they know that Lawrence is probably part of it. And especially because he does suspect Lawrence, knowing that he was in an asylum, but he's actually a good cop. And just because it's a cursed family, that doesn't account for a warrant for him to sit there and watch the family. He also stays there, and I quote, because if the beast does attack, this is where the victims are going to be. Again, it's encouraged by Sir John that Lawrence doesn't leave the house. And Lawrence grabs a gun or two with silver bullets because he's going to protect the house. But he also sees Sir John leave the house and go to the moor. So Lawrence starts following him. And they end up at a mausoleum where the casket of Lawrence's mother is. It has a crypt underneath it that Sir John has gone into. And inside the crypt is a shrine to the mother. Basically, Sir John has built this thing to remember the mother by. When Lawrence walks into the shrine room looking for Sir John is nowhere to be seen. And so he gets into the room, and all of a sudden the door closes behind him. And Sir John basically snuck around and locked Lawrence in this room because he knows that he's going to become a wolf. So he locks himself away in the crypt and makes sure that he can't go anywhere. This is not going to be what happens to Lawrence. And this is kind of like a protection thing. It feels weird because it feels like Sir John's kind of like punishing him. But at the same time, it's also because I don't think he wants Lawrence to get injured by the townspeople or anything like that. So after locking him in the crypt and the shrine and everything like that, all of a sudden, Lawrence starts becoming a wolf in a solid enough transition scene. Like, it was pretty solid watching him just transition into this wolf man. The shrine room door, not enough to stand up to the wolf man. He's able to break it down pretty easily and get out of the mausoleum crypt. And the villagers all start to go towards their house because they know they're going to break into the mansion. That's what they're thinking and everything like that. And this party all of a sudden starts getting ambushed by the wolfman, including this guy that gets stuck in the moor, and he tries to kill himself with his gun, but the wolfman gets there first and rips his head off with one fell swoop. That was pretty gnarly. This whole situation, like, wolfman kills like four men quickly. That was a really good scene, actually. Like, it showed how scary he is. It showed how fast he is. It shows how ruthless he is. And so it honestly was a pretty solid scene to watch that whole thing go on. Aberline chases after him, but is behind him the whole way and kind of loses him until it is the next day. Lawrence wakes up and he is in the forest and he's covered in blood and his clothes are ripped. Aberline and the villagers are able to catch up to him and they send him to an asylum. And it turns out that Sir John seems to have called him. Again, this is one of those things. It's like Sir John's kind of trying to protect him, but at the same time, like, he sends him to an asylum again, you know? So it's one of those things where it's just, does he care about him? Does he not? That kind of thing. And the asylum, we get a bunch of scenes about them trying to get Lawrence cured, but these are the cures of the 1890s. So he gets like waterboarded with ice water. There's electroshock therapy, like that kind of stuff. And it's not good. It's very not good for Lawrence. And then he's kept in essentially a solitary confinement cell. And one day Sir John shows up and tells Lawrence how he is also lycanthropy, which means he's also a werewolf too. And we learn through Sir John that his mother didn't kill herself. He was killed by the werewolf Sir John. He also killed Ben, both of which were not meant to happen, but they happened. This is also the reason he gives for locking up Lawrence. He wants to protect the village and everything like that. He also wants to protect Lawrence in a way, but basically he knows that if he's locked up, the village is safe. And then because Sir John's such a kind, caring person, he also leaves a razor blade so that Lawrence can kill himself if he doesn't want to live or suffer anymore. All right, so we're at the point where Sir John has basically told his own son to kill himself to not suffer anymore. I know, it's very gruesome, very like sad and everything like that. And he's still stuck in an asylum. So we are at point like perfect of pity moment, everything like that. We're at wit's end, everything. So I think now is a very good time to take a quick break to let you know all about the podcast that guessed the bad movie correctly first. And that podcast is the I Finally Watched podcast. You can find them at Finally Watched on X/Twitter/ whatever the fuck we're calling it. This is Alon and David. They basically, they watch movies that they should have watched a long time ago. So one of the latest episodes, their episode from October 14th, was Vampire's Kiss from 1988, starring Nicolas Cage. Obviously, if you've listened to our podcast before, you know how big a Nicolas Cage fan I am. So definitely something I encourage you to check out, at least their latest episode, but a lot more, of course, than just that. And another big little thing that happened, Alon and his wife are pregnant and they are having a baby. They are doing the gender reveal this weekend. And this was a big thing for me that I thought was pretty funny. They put it out there with a poll so that everybody could guess what gender they thought it was, boy, girl, or corn. And as of recording, girl and corn are tied in second place. So let's go corn. We all hope that is a corn baby, of course. So Alon and David, congratulations for guessing correctly the Wolfman. Check out their podcast, the I Finally Watched podcast. It's more movie talk. If you like our show, I know you're going to like theirs, especially when they do episodes about Nicolas Cage movies like Vampire's Kiss. So congratulations, guys. And now back to more about the Wolfman. So our boy Lawrence is in an asylum. His dad has basically said it's for the village's good. So they believe that all of these things are in his head, that he has this delusion of the full moon, thinking he becomes a beast, thinking his family's cursed and everything like that. So they roll him into this operating theater and he's like strapped in and everything like that to test on this full moon night and say, hey, this was all a delusion. Try to break him of his delusion. You know, this is going to go well. And the main doctor that's been like running the torture and everything like that basically is turned to the people, the other doctors, and goes, he will not turn into a werewolf, just like I won't sprout wings and fly through this window. And I hate to tell you, that's a little bit of foreshadowing. Because guess what happens? Yep, you would be correct. He become werewolf. So all the doctors start trying to get out the doors of the operating theater. But instead of pulling the doors open and getting out, they keep running into each other and pushing it closed. Like it just keeps getting like a stockpile of people. And these are supposed to be doctors. Like these are supposed to be smart people and everything like that. So as he becomes a wolf, he's able to break his restraints and he starts going after all of the doctors, including the one that said he will not turn into a werewolf, just like I won't sprout wings and fly through this window. Yeah, he grabs him and throws him through a window, which he lands on some fence spikes. Yeah. That sounds painful. Also in this room was Aberline, who saw the transformation and is now chasing after the Wolfman, who hopped out of the window. He's chasing after him with a revolver. The Wolfman is running across the rooftops and going through a tear through the city, the closest city that they're in. And he's only killing men at this point. It seems like one of those things that at this point, it kind of seems to the both of us, because Claire was watching this too, and she was the one that asked this question. It kind of seems to both of us that maybe we're going to have this moment where Gwen kind of is like, oh, you know who I am, Lawrence. You can stop it. You can turn around and not kill me. But that's just what we think at this point. This tear through the city that he's going through, we find out after he wakes up that he's in London. And not only is he in London, he wakes up right next to like the King's Bridge or London Bridge or whatever big bridge is there and everything like that. He wakes up kind of underneath in a sewer pretty much and sees the bridge, so we know he's in London. The next scene we see is Gwen opening up her shop that she runs in London. And, you know, nonchalantly, he rolls out from under a table to talk to Gwen about everything that's happening. Gwen tries to convince him to stay, and they make out. And, you know, it's the first kiss, you know, it's always so cute and everything like that. And all I can think about is that she was engaged or married to his brother, you know. And so she wants him to stay, but he needs to get to Talbot Hall to end it. That's what he says. So he leaves the shop. Couple minutes later, Aberline and his posse show up at the door asking about Lawrence and where he could possibly have gone. And Gwen kind of just says, like, he's not here. They search his whole or her whole shop, and he had snuck out the back door, and he's not there anymore. So we know he needs to get to Talbot Hall. Gwen, on her own, goes and tries to research to find an end to Lawrence's werewolf problem, the lycanthropy. So she goes to the library searching up books and ways to end being a werewolf and everything like that. Lawrence walks all the way back from London to Blackmoor. Gwen is looking for Maleva, and Aberline is searching high and low for Lawrence. It seems like he's kind of just like right behind him the whole time. Maleva meets up with Gwen, but she doesn't know if she can help him. And Gwen is pleading with Maleva to help him and everything like that. And Maleva asks, "Do you love him?" To which I included the line, "If love is the answer, this movie sucks." I hate that. Basically, Maleva was asking, "Do you love him?" Because the only cure for this is to kill him. And so she wanted to see if she'd be willing to kill him. When Aberline gets back to Blackmoor with his villagers or his posse that he has, he gives the all clear that everybody should shoot Lawrence Talbot on sight. And Lawrence sneaks back into Blackmoor, and more specifically the Talbot Hall, because he wore a hat. Yes, the Marvel gimmick of, he wore a hat. When he gets back to the hall, he goes to the crypt because he's guessing that's where Sir John might be. And he finds Sing dead, and he was definitely mauled. Like, it was no question who did this. Sir John definitely killed Sing. So Lawrence loads his gun with silver bullets and starts to go look for his father. I was saying how this could happen on any night. It didn't need to be a full moon, but he decided that the night he was going to try to find his father. It's a full moon night. I also said at this point, no offense meant to Samson the dog, but he somehow survives this whole thing. And my first thought would be that any night that somebody turns into a wolf, they'd probably kill Samson the dog first. Maybe they have some kind of dog communication that they do, you know, they talk in wolves or whatever, but I would think that he would probably be the first to go. When he finally finds Sir John is sitting behind a piano and is playing, of course, because that's what Sir John does. He's already killed the posse member who was told to watch over Talbot Hall. And Sir John does what every villain in this situation does. He starts monologuing. And so it seems that Lawrence would have the upper hand because, he has the gun and everything like that. But then the gun doesn't work. And so Sir John is able to take the upper hand, and they're doing battle. And it's basically just like at first, just two humans. But of course, it's still a full moon night. And when the house catches on fire, they both break apart and they both become wolves. And I have the biggest quote for me while I'm watching this movie. It's a wolf off. Let's fucking go. Wolf off, wolf off, wolf off. It's okay, the wolf off, but it's one of those like super cheesy ones where like they hit you and you just go flying. Doesn't matter how hard you get hit, you just go flying off into the distance. And they also can climb walls. So it's kind of one of those like, what are we doing with these? Like, werewolves, I don't think can climb walls. I'm guessing they're more powerful, but I don't think it should matter that you should go flying off into the distance. So they're doing this battle. It's not very long, this battle, but, you know, it's one of those, it's father versus son, you know, who's going to win. And Lawrence the Wolf kicks Sir John, sends him flying into the fireplace, where he immediately catches on fire. Then Lawrence is able to chop his head off with his claws. So at the end of the fight, Gwen gets there, and so does Aberline. They both kind of arrive at similar times, and Aberline lines up a shot at Lawrence. But Gwen grabs his gun, so they can't shoot Lawrence. And then Lawrence is able to jump away and attack Aberline. Aberline's still alive, and he is able to grab the silver blade from the walking stick. And Aberline, even though he's injured, starts taking off after him. Gwen also goes running into the woods to try to find Lawrence and trying to talk him out of it and see if she can do anything to help. And she ends up back at the river, you know, the river where Lawrence was teaching her how to skip stones and everything like that. This is where Lawrence and Ben played as kids. She feels like he's going to be there. And he does show up. For a second, he seems to remember Gwen. And he holds off attacking for a second. But the villagers show up. When the villagers show up, it's just distraction enough that she's able to pick up the gun and shoot him through the chest. Lawrence starts de-transforming from a wolf. And his eyes are closed and we think maybe he's dead. But of course, he's able to become alive one more second and say goodbye. And she can apologize for shooting him. He accepts the apology and then falls to the side dead really abruptly. Just like all of a sudden just out. And the film ends with Aberline seeing this and then looking at the moon, looking at his marks. And will he become a beast? We don't know. Movie over. So about the Wolfman, I have seen a lot worse movies, especially for this podcast. I think this one, it's not bad, honestly. It's not great, but it's not bad. I've seen much worse for this podcast, and I was definitely able to enjoy a lot of it. It's very simple plot and everything like that. It's definitely a paint-by-numbers kind of thing. But the fact that they're taking inspiration from a 1940s thing when this was probably so new and everything, I think they did a good job transferring it a little more to, I know this is going to sound weird, transforming it to the present. Obviously, that's not what happens because it's still the 1890s and everything like that. But it does look better. It does feel better, that kind of stuff. So I was actually really okay with this movie, especially comparing it to something like The Mummy from 2017 that was trying to set up this dark universe. I feel like this one, in my mind, I would want to see more of these style movies versus more of The Mummy of 2017. It's very, like I said, it's very paint by numbers. It's you're getting what the movie is. Like you can see it kind of from the beginning. Obviously, there's a lot of points where I was guessing ahead. And though some of the things that I left in this episode weren't exactly what happened, these were the ones that I left in just because these were what I was thinking in that moment. There was a lot of other things that I was thinking that were the same that I just didn't include that, oh, I was thinking this at this point. The cast was pretty damn good. Its dialogue is a little clunky at times, but overall, I really enjoyed the performances and everything like that. Everybody had a time to shine for certain different scenes and everything. One of the things I was worried about with this movie is that I feel like a lot of the female characters in these kind of movies are just there to be a damsel in distress, what we've called before Jill's term of a sexy lamp. I will say that Emily Blunt in this movie was not just a sexy lamp. She wasn't there just to be there and something to look at and everything like that. I think she actually was a very good part of this, where she advanced the plot. She also had some parts where she was a real person, you know? She actually felt like a real character fleshed out and everything like that, in my mind. Lawrence was great. Benicio del Toro, you know, he's a great actor as is. And just he probably was one of the not as well-written characters, if you want to know the truth. And because Benicio del Toro is just such a good actor, I think he brought a little more life to it and everything. Anthony Hopkins, you know what you're going to get with him. It's Anthony Hopkins. Hugo Weaving, I love. I think some of his stuff was very fun in the fact that he's very conniving and very, you know, he had the most fun lines. And somebody like Hugo Weaving, I think, deserves something like that because it's a lot of fun seeing him play around with it and still bringing this level of, like, you kind of know he's the bad guy. But at the same time, you kind of like him for this, you know, especially the scene where he's sitting at the pub instead of sitting at Talbot Hall and talking about this is where the victims are going to be. You know, it's very like, it almost feels like a threat, but because it's Hugo Weaving, it feels kind of like he's actually there to protect you. But yes, some of you are probably going to die. So I think the biggest disservice to this movie was the wolf off at the end, where everything was just kind of, it was very CGI mess kind of thing. And they're flying across the room and it's a lot of rope work and stuff like that, that feels stiff. You know, when he hits him, it's like, you know, he's going to go straight line all the way across. It's not actually like feeling like two wolves fighting. I know that sounds very weird, but it doesn't feel like that. So I think that's the biggest disservice to this movie. Otherwise, I actually really kind of liked it. Overall, I would say this is probably this might be one of my higher rankings. I'll go say a 2.5 silver bullets out of 5. That feels right, honestly. It's not going to be everybody's cup of tea, and I totally understand why some people don't like this movie. I wish it was better, but again, comparing it to something like The Mummy, I actually really enjoyed this one a lot more because I think it had a lot more to say and a lot more that it was setting up, even though it didn't have a setup like that. I think it was its very own standalone movie, but it was kind of just, it's good that it was that. One of my biggest problems with The Mummy from 2017 was that they tried to bring in Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You know, it was Jekyll was setting up this whole thing and he was very much the Nick Fury of the dark universe and everything like that. And it was like, they're trying to run before they can walk on that. This one felt more so its own story. It could be tied to something bigger, but it was his own story. And I like that. I thought it was very good. So 2.5 silver bullets out of 5, I think, is one of the better rankings for sure of a bad movie I've watched for this podcast. So yeah, I'm not going to suggest it. It's not going to be like a Halloween treat every single year that I'm going to keep watching over and over and over again. Am I glad I watched it? Yeah. Do I need to see it again? No. I'm overall happy with my experience. I'm glad I watched it and got to see something that broke up the monotony of just stupid for stupid sake. The end, like I said, kind of broke it a little bit. There's certain things it dragged a little bit at points, but for the most part, this definitely had some of the best scenes in a bad movie I've seen. The attack of the villagers and everything, I thought that was a very good one. And there was a lot of good transformation scenes, that kind of thing. Just what you want in a Wolfman movie. So, yeah, that's my thoughts on Wolfman. We've got one more spoopy episode. I've already watched the movie, and let me tell you right now, the ending pissed me the fuck off for that one. So, if you're listening now, trust me, you're going to want to listen to the next one too, because the next one, you're going to get my rage. I am going to be firing on all cylinders about the ending of that one. This one, kind of giving it a little more of a, I'm not as picky with a fine-tooth comb about every last thing in this one. I think this one was exactly what I wanted it to be. I wish it was a little better with like the wolf off and everything like that, because obviously I was really excited about that. But overall, this was a good movie, and I do see why this is one of the first, if not the first, bad movies I've watched that won an Oscar. So, yeah. That's the Wolfman. I've got one more episode for Spoopy Season coming out. I'm hoping to come out on Halloween. And yeah, so if you haven't listened to the episodes to start off Spoopy Season, The Curse of Downers Grove, which is about my hometown. I also did Godsend, which was a little weird in the timing because my son was born around the time where we were talking about this evil child movie. So it was very hit home for me. So, yeah, those two episodes are out everywhere you can find your podcast. This one, obviously, you're listening to now. Thank you guys very much for listening. And if you do enjoy the show, please feel free to give us a review, things you'd like to see, that kind of thing. Always hit us up at Game for a Movie Podcast, wherever you find anything, at Game for a Movie on Instagram, on X/Twitter. We're on Blue Sky. We're on Threads. We're on pretty much everything. So find us anywhere at Game for a Movie. Let us know some movies we can watch next. So yeah, that is the Game for a Movie Podcast, where we ask, are you game for a movie? I've been your host, Mike. I will have one more spoopy episode for you next week, and I will see you next time on the Game for a Movie Podcast. Bye.